I'm Jordan Abel, Director of Public Programs at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and I welcome you to BINA, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the JCCSF. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of BINA, our guest is writer and intersex activist Hida Viloria. Hida is joined in conversation by Sam McConnell, producer of the documentary The Trans List. And now join Maggie Grabmeier on stage at the JCCSF as she introduces Hida Viloria and Sam McConnell.
Hida Viloria is a groundbreaking Latinx writer and activist fighting for visibility and equality for the intersex community. Hida was raised as a girl, but she always understood that her gender identity and expression were not strictly female or male. After discovering an intersex community, Hida came out publicly and became one of the leading voices on the path for intersex visibility. Hida is a chairperson of the organization Intersex International and founding director of OII USA, the Intersex Campaign for Equality. And she was the first openly intersex person to speak at the United Nations. Her new memoir, Born Both, chronicles her life from finding love for herself to helping others feel like they're not alone. Hida is joined tonight by filmmaker Sam McConnell, who recently produced HBO's The Outlist and The Trans List. Please give a warm welcome to Hida Viloria and Sam McConnell.
Hi, Hida.
Hi,
everyone. So happy that you're all here. I think a lot of people here either know Hida or know of Hida's work. I had the opportunity to meet Hida a few years ago at our friend's mutual friend's wedding, Kelly and Keelan, who are here. I was immediately struck by her humor and intellect and warmth. And I think all of that comes through and so much more in your book, Born Both. I was very honored to be able to read an advanced copy of this a few months ago. And I was just so impressed by it and learned so much more about you and about the intersex movement. So I'm really honored to be here. I love our conversations. I feel like I never have enough time with you, but here we are. And you know what I always think? You know what we really need is a captive audience. So,
yay!
So here we are. I was thinking maybe as just a kickoff, we could do like a quick speed round, like a 101 speed round. I know this audiences in San Francisco are probably the most like progressive and woke audience we'll ever find, but there may be some people who aren't totally familiar with all of these terms, and maybe some people listening that aren't aware of everything. So maybe just we can start off, Hida. How do you identify?
So I identify in a lot of different ways. So thank you for asking. I think, you know, my first strong identification was as a feminist and a Latina, because I still, I didn't know I was intersex until much later, and I'll read a little excerpt about that. But yeah, I was very identified as a woman living in an immigrant home. My parents are Colombian and Venezuelan immigrants, and it was a very sexist culture. And so I quickly became a strong feminist. And so that was my earliest identification that was really strong. And it was both. I also felt very Latina. I didn't feel American. And it was obvious, you know, from our accents and everything that we weren't typically American. And today, flashing forward, I identify as a Latinx. Does anyone know that term, Latinx? Have you seen it? Okay, great. So I love that term was invented. I can't take credit for it, although I feel like I should have invented it because I needed a term that wasn't having to, you know, that was gender neutral, because Spanish is completely gendered. So it was very hard to communicate in Spanish, and I would be saying like Latinao, like A/O, you know, so the X invention was great. And so today I identify as a Latinx, gender fluid. That's a big part of my journey, being gender fluid. Has everyone heard about gender fluid, what that means? It's a gender identity term, and it's people whose gender expression and identity shifts over time. So It's become a little popular now, but I have to say that that was probably the most difficult part of my journey, and to embrace really being gender fluid, because people expect you to be stable in your gender and your gender presentation and your gender expression, right? So it was very difficult to come to terms and realize that mine just shifts, and that is actually what is my true identity, because I kept trying to choose. So a queer, and so originally lesbian identified, but then as I discovered I'm intersex, the term lesbian doesn't exactly fit, right? So I personally love the term queer because it's gender neutral. It means you're kind of gay in some way, but not attached to an exclusive gender, right? So it's perfect for me. So I'm a queer, Latinx, gender fluid, child of immigrants, intersex, activist, and perhaps most importantly, writer, because that is really my true passion, and I feel so blessed to be able to be doing it, you know, professionally.
Excellent. Well, can you explain for someone maybe who has never heard the term intersex, what does it mean exactly to be intersex?
Yeah, good question. So the technical definition is intersex people are people who are born with sex characteristics, meaning chromosomes, gonads, testes or ovaries, or genitalia, which are not typically male or female, or which are a blend of both male and female characteristics. So, you know, the word hermaphrodite is what we used to be called, and most people know that term, so that's an easy way. I don't dislike that term personally, but many of my fellow community members do, so we prefer intersex. But I do like that the term connotes that there is a physical aspect going on, because some people get confused about intersex, right? They think it's the same as transgender. They think it's a mental thing going on, but it's actually being born a certain way. Yeah.
So what exactly is the difference between being trans and being intersex?
So being transgender means that your gender identity, how you feel as either a man or a woman or something else, non-binary person, doesn't match the sex characteristics you were born with. So, you know, I mean, there used to be other ways of expressing this, but I think that's the most respectful way, because as intersex people reveal, the terms male and female are not really, they're problematic. A lot of people fall outside of our understanding of what male and female is. And a lot of people that you might assume are typical females and women, for example, could have XY chromosomes and internal testes, which means that that's one variation of intersex, which means you are chromosomally, you know, and biologically male, and yet everyone perceives you as female and you're gendered as female at birth because externally you appear female. So this concept of sex being exclusively binary is really false. You know, it was created because it's kind of what's more typical. You know, the majority of people fall into this, but there are many exceptions. So transgender people have an internal identification which doesn't match what our ideas are of what they should feel like with the sex characteristics they were born with, right? And intersex people just, they can have any gender identity, and we have all different gender identities, but we are literally born not male or female by the typical definition.
So as a follow-up, can you be intersex and also identify as trans or male and female?
Great question. Yeah, no, because people get confused. Yes, you can, and I have several friends who are both intersex and trans, and I will explain that to say that, for example, even myself and those who have already read the book know, I went through a period where people thought I was trans because I was assigned female when I was born and, you know, grew up as a typical girl, identified as a girl. But then later on, I started presenting as a boy wearing men's clothing. And I thought I would look just typically lesbian, but actually people started thinking I was a boy, really exclusively. And so a lot of people thought I was trans because that looks like a trans trajectory, right? You grew up female, now you're looking like a man, living like a man. And yet I was intersex. I had these physical characteristics from the start that were not typically female. So some people in my position with that experience identify as both intersex, how they were born, and also trans, because their lived experience is, you know, very similar to most trans people's. I sort of now have been included in the transgender umbrella, because being gender fluid and being non-binary is part of the transgender umbrella, right? So you could say that I am both intersex and trans as well, although I kind of, I don't feel that I transitioned to anything, you know? So that's why I don't personally use that term. I just feel like I kind of learned to embrace what I always was.
Excellent. All right, everyone clear? We all caught up? Just kidding. Well, thank you for that. I would love to just kind of do a little dive into your book, Born Both. Like I said, I had a chance to read it a couple months ago, and I was just struck by so much of it. I think it's both such a personal memoir of your own story, of your life and your love and your family, and then a really a beautiful... to the beginning of a movement and your career as an activist. So really recommend anyone to get it, to take a look. I'm curious, what compelled you to write a book in the first place? What was it that you hoped that people would take away from it?
I was always wanting to be an artist, and I wasn't sure of the medium. And I, you know, tried different things and really loved them, but I decided writing was my strongest talent. And then I just felt like this was the strongest, the most important story for me to tell. You know, even though there could be things much easier in terms of not having to reveal my entire soul than writing a memoir, I just felt like if I was going to make the effort, it was the most important story. And when I say important story, I mean not just to spread understanding about intersex people in general, but also because intersex people are still today undergoing a gendercide. So many of you are aware of this, but in case you are not, there are standard routine institutional efforts by the medical community to essentially erase intersex people from society. So when an intersex child is born and they are visibly noted to be different from typically male or female, it is called a social emergency. And there's like an immediate effort to correct them, quote unquote, to fit into the male or female binary. So that's what I meant earlier when I said that this binary is false, because you're literally carving up people's bodies and taking away their right to self-determination, to future pleasure and joy, in order to maintain this false notion that everyone is male or female. So, you know, I felt that it was really important for me to share as someone who, by luck and, you know, many different circumstances, was not subjected to these procedures. I felt that it was so important for me to share why I'm happy that I was left as I am, basically.
Why do you think that you were you escaped having those kinds of surgeries?
Well, in a nutshell, my dad is, he's going to be 89 this year. So when he went to medical school in Colombia, these procedures literally had not been created yet. They were created around 5 years, I want to say, after he finished medical school. So that meant that, A, he was a doctor when I was born, so they couldn't treat us in the same way, meaning that they couldn't give my parents false information about what my health status was, what surgeries I needed. You know, my dad knew. So it was like, you know, kind of this very fortunate thing that he was on the inside. And also, he hadn't been indoctrinated with this thinking, because remember I mentioned the sexist upbringing? Well, I think that had he been indoctrinated in medical school,
about the fact that these surgeries can, you know, help people grow up to be heterosexual and normal in their gender expression, I think that he would have had it done because he was very attached to the status quo and to gender norms, like many people from his generation and his culture and even today still are. So, yeah.
So you pretty much dodged a bullet by a few years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Totally.
Well, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about your years as a girl growing up. What was it like? When did you kind of first start to notice or understand that, you know, there was something different about you compared with other girls?
It's a really good question. And so I have a little excerpt I'm going to read about that. But what I want to say is that something that's really fascinating to me about being intersex is that it shows me firsthand that all of these notions we have about how children will feel about themselves, how people who are, quote, different will feel about themselves, are really false. And so I'm going to read this excerpt, and I think what's most striking about it is that despite the fact that I was becoming aware of this really significant difference, I didn't internalize it in a negative way, and I didn't really think of myself as, you know, I mean, the words that are used by psychiatrists and doctors about intersex people, and they're all presumptive and unsubstantiated with research, are, to just simplify it, that we will all feel like freaks, you know, and not be able to exist if we're not surgically carved into the male or female binary. So I think that that is completely false, and I'm going to read a little excerpt that kind of touches on that. About a week later, during my follow-up visit, my doctor says, "Can I ask you a personal question?" "I guess so," I answer. "Has your clitoris always been this large?" I think back to the first time I remember noticing something was different about my genitalia. I didn't know the word clitoris yet, but I had noticed my thing and that it moved a little whenever I peed. It seemed like the stream was coming from it. In fact, I was convinced it was, until I learned that only boys peed that way. So I decided to give myself a genital exam to find out what was going on. Of course, in an ideal world, I would have just asked my mom, but I knew I couldn't talk to her about such things. "Privates are privates," she always said, and would hide hers whenever she changed while my siblings and I were in the room. She even made my little sister Eden and me hide ours from each other. I hadn't seen Eden's privates since she got out of diapers. I also never knew how my mom was going to react to things I told her. One time, when I was about 4, I told her about how my best friend, who was a boy, asked me if he could kiss my butt and that I let him. I didn't know it was so different from kissing my hand or my forehead. I just thought it was funny and that she would laugh like I did. But she started yelling at me. And then she did something I never imagined she would. She told my dad. I never saw the boy again. That said, it was best for me to figure out the pee thing on my own. I unplugged the desk lamp in my bedroom, grabbed my pink plastic handheld mirror, and set up in the bathroom upstairs. I angled the lamp to act as a spotlight, stood over the toilet, and held the mirror in a way that I could see my privates in it. Then I let it rip. It was hard to tell at first, but after a while I could see that the pee was actually coming from a tiny hole somewhere underneath my clitoris. I remember feeling disappointed for a moment. For some reason, I liked the way it moved and the idea that I was urinating out of it. But I also knew that it was better this way. I was a girl, after all, and girls were not supposed to pee like boys.
You're listening to writer and intersex activist Hida Valoria, whose new book is Born Both, An Intersex Life. Hida is joined in conversation by Sam McConnell, producer of the documentary The Trans List, on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
In the examination room, the doctor clears her throat. I don't remember any sudden growth spurts, I answer. So yeah, I guess it's always been large. I'd like to do some tests, she says with a strange look on her face. Why? Is there anything wrong? She pauses, looking down at my chart. You said on your form that you've had acne problems in the past. Yeah, but only briefly when I was in high school and not more than anyone else. And you also said that you have some facial hair on your upper lip, she continues, eyeing me closely. Well, yeah, but not more than most Latin or Mediterranean women. I just think it's a good idea, she insists. But why? Is there some kind of medical issue or something I should know about? I ask, confused. Not necessarily, she begins. I can tell that, for some reason, she seems reluctant to answer my question. Well, she finally blurts out, it just isn't normal. I don't like the tone of her voice or the thinly veiled look of disgust on her face. She reminds me of the snobby people at the fancy restaurants my parents sometimes took us to when I was a kid. They weren't used to dark-haired Latinos like us having enough money to mingle among them, and their expressions were far from welcoming. Well, I say firmly, feeling anger welling up. Since there's no medical issue, then no thanks. I don't want any tests. The appointment ends soon afterward, and I leave, knowing I'll never go back. Her, I think, on my way home. I know my body's different, but she didn't have to make it sound like I'm abnormal in a bad way. As much as I try to ignore these kinds of thoughts, though, her comments begin to fill me with nagging doubts over time, the way certain remarks can. I begin to think, she is a doctor, after all. Maybe she knows something I don't. A few months later, I finally decide to see a gynecologist at the center, the Gay and Lesbian Community Center in Manhattan. They have a medical clinic with a sliding scale, and I figure their doctors will be more accepting. You know how I told you about my ectopic pregnancy? I asked the doctor as she's wrapping up my routine gynecological checkup. Yes? Well, the doctor who operated on me said afterward that she wanted to do tests because my clitoris isn't normal, like I'm a freak or something, because it's as big as it is. Well, that wasn't a very nice thing to say, was it? She says. I'm relieved and grateful to see that she's a caring person. No, it wasn't, but do you think there's anything I should be worried about? I ask. If you want to lie back down, I'll check again, she says, but your ovaries felt fine to me. That'd be great, I say, lying down. Yep, she says as she feels around, same as I thought the first time, perfectly healthy. Thanks for checking again. You know, she continues, looking me right in the eyes, genitals come in all shapes and sizes, and I think your clitoris is beautiful. Her words are as soothing as the Caribbean nurses in the hospital, and I feel a tear of relief and gratitude roll down my cheek. I search her face for insincerity, so used to people like my dad who always look down on anything outside the status quo. But I can't find any. In the weeks that pass, I'm struck by the contrast in how the two doctors viewed me. One saw me as I see myself, perfectly healthy, with a variance in my genitals that's nothing to be ashamed of. Part of me wonders if this doctor said those things just to be nice, but it still feels good, especially since the other doctor had found me so strange. The way she had wanted to run tests makes me think of sci-fi movies where unusual beings are whisked off to government labs upon discovery. I have a vague sense of having narrowly avoided something, but I have no idea what.
I love that passage so much. I think something that a lot of people take for granted, that their doctor will just see them as normal. What did that feel like to you to finally find a doctor that really treated you as a human being, and you know, there wasn't something abnormal with you?
I have to say, especially considering the stories that I heard later, I feel that it was like divine intervention. You know, I really feel so very lucky, because so many of the other people that I've met who are intersex had very different experiences where all the doctors treated them as abnormal. And so much so that they came to see themselves that way. You know, so I had this experience which, for the first time in my life, I had started to question, like, well, maybe I'm too different, or, you know, maybe there's a problem with this. And this second doctor, like, affirmed what I believed in inside, that it was fine. But I wonder, you know, and I've met some adults, and it's so, I see this moment as so critical in my life, because I've met adults who did get the tests done and at the same age, at 19 or 20, and then were talked into having surgeries that they now regret, like, decades later, and, you know, ever since and for decades have been regretting. So I think that it was really important, an extremely positive moment in my life. Yeah.
So even at this time, though, you still didn't have a word necessarily for it. So when did you finally hear the term intersex, and kind of what was that experience like? Did you have this kind of aha moment where the kind of puzzle pieces came together and you said, this is me?
Totally. Yeah. So I have a nice San Francisco-based passage about that. And it's funny that I know the exact moment and location where that happened, my aha moment, on the 22 Fillmore bus, actually. and so, which is funny, right? Yeah, and it was, you know, I also, this is another example of how, like, all these presumptions aren't necessarily true, because a lot of people talk about how, oh, if someone discovers they're intersex, it will be this, like, horrible moment. And for me, it was actually, like, it was strange, but it answered a lot of questions, and it quickly became very positive. You know, there was the initial moment of surprise, really, and then it quickly became very, very positive, because it answered all these this confusion I had felt. So with that, I will jump into this passage. February 1995. I'm on the corner of 16th and Dolores Streets in San Francisco, waiting for the 22 bus. And as it pulls up, I grab a copy of the SF Weekly. On the cover is a picture of a person's face that looks half male, half female. The features seem pasted together, like a collage I might have created as a kid. The resulting visage is smiling, with huge eyes that seem all-knowing yet, at the same time, confused. The headline reads, "Both and Neither." The words jump out at me from the cover. I walk to the back of the bus, take my place next to an old Chinese woman with a bag of groceries on her lap, and open to the article. It's about intersex, a term I've never heard before, that refers to people who are born with both male and female traits, what some would call hermaphrodites. Both male and female traits. The bus lurches forward, and I sit there, completely frozen. For a few moments, the time it takes to get to Market Street, the world disappears. Although I've heard of hermaphrodites, they seemed so rare that you'd never actually meet one. Like those yogis in the Himalayas that are rumored to be 200 years old. This article, however, tells me that 1 in 2,000 people are born with genitals like mine, which they call ambiguous. That means intersex people are a lot more common than I thought. They are everywhere, in fact. And sometimes they don't even know they're intersex. They don't even know they're intersex. Jesus. Is this the word I've always lacked? Is this the word to describe my very private, secret difference? The difference that's become more and more confusing over the years? There are two women interviewed in the article. One is about my age and looks smart and pretty in a slightly rebellious sort of way. She reminds me of the women with whom I went to Wesleyan. Some of whom are here tonight. But that's where the similarity ends. Because both she and the other woman in the piece endured something the likes of which I'd never heard. Their clitorises were surgically removed. Their doctors had decided that they were too big and recommended cosmetic genital surgeries to their parents to help them fit in as women. But the women in the article said the result was just the opposite, because the surgeries made them unable to orgasm. The thought of those little girls having forced operations gives me the heebie-jeebies. But the article says it's the standard treatment in the United States and other parts of the first world for babies born with ambiguous genitalia. I look up from the paper, shocked. The old lady next to me has nodded off peacefully. Her head bobs back and forth as the bus bounces over the pavement. She wakes up whenever there's a particularly bumpy patch, then drifts off again just as quickly. Her presence calms me. Life goes on, despite the craziness that has just unleashed itself from the pages of this newspaper. The women in the article sound a lot like me, and they're intersex. You could have put an article in front of me about aliens being discovered working in the White House, and it would have been less shocking to me than this information. I mean, I've known that my body is different for a while, but to possibly be a hermaphrodite? And to learn that there's a worldwide medical effort to eliminate intersex people? It sounds like a frightening science fiction movie. There's a part of me going, nah, 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 can't hear you, because it's just so much to take in. I've been getting my period since I was 11. I must be a woman, right? And I've never had one of these surgeries. But at the same time, there's also a quiet, persistent voice in my head going, aha, I knew it. I remember several incidents in a flash. My mom's strange, they thought you were a boy comment. Thinking I peed out of my clit. Being asked if I have a I didn't know there was even a word to describe someone who wasn't a typical woman. But now I do.
That's it. I think we're running a little bit late on time, but I know you had another, I think one more passage you wanted to share.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, let's dive into it.
Yeah, thank you. And I wanted to... just say that what's really lovely is that after feeling, you know, all this pressure, right, and kind of, I call them my gender surfing years, when I was really like just playing with gender expression and gender roles and trying out different things. And again, I'm very fortunate that I was living in San Francisco where I could do that safely. Then I had a shift, which I actually prayed for, because I felt so tortured for quite a few years about not knowing what my true gender was. It really, living in this binary world, it was torturous to feel at times very feminine and then wake up, you know, 2 days later and feel completely masculine and just not, you know, no, and have everyone around me choosing, you know, and many of the people that I was with in the late 90s ended up transitioning, which is, you know, was great for them. But I felt like I didn't want to change who I was, but I was just so confused about who I was. And so it was actually the Burning Man community that kind of helped, assisted me in this whole process because, you know, as many of you know, Burning Man started in San Francisco. And I had a friend who was very involved in that community who ended up being my roommate and taking me out to these things. And I finally went to my first Burning Man in 2000. And so I had this moment there, which I feel like was really one of my important moments in beginning to embrace being gender fluid before that was, you know, a known identity. So I'm just going to read a short passage about that. After riding around for a bit longer, I learned that Jared is a DJ, and he knows a lot of other DJs at the festival. He takes us to where one of them is spinning. The guy's name is Lauren, but he's known by his stage name, Bass Nectar, and it turns out he's amazing. His music is some of the coolest dance music I've ever heard, and I was into the early 90s SF Underground outdoor dance party scene, before they were called raves, so I've heard a lot of good DJs in my day. While listening to him, I danced my ass off, and my thighs off, and my feet off. I danced my way into another dimension, a dimension where I'm not dancing along to the music, I am predicting the music. I'm one step ahead of it, pouncing on every beat like I know exactly when it's going to drop, like the DJ and I are telepathically connected. Through the glorious haze of my dancing, I notice that people are staring at me, a lot of girls in particular, and I like the expression on their faces. I feel like I'm a magnet for both curious and beautiful girls and boys. I'm wearing these low-rise velvet pants with a psychedelic pattern that I got with Beth ages ago at Patricia Field, our favorite clothing store in the village. My top is a child-sized Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles t-shirt that I pulled and stretched till it was big enough for me to squeeze into. The bottom makes it just past my breasts, so you can see my whole stomach, which is looking more cut than usual with the water loss I've experienced over the past 24 hours. I look very... Is that a boy or a girl? Some things about me are sexy in a womanly way, like my smooth skin and the way my body moves. But then I'm also flat-chested and more muscular than most women, with small hips and an aggressive masculinity to some of my dance moves. My energy moves back and forth from masculine to feminine and everywhere in between. It seems to mesmerize the crowd. Most people can't stop staring and gravitating toward me. Although the boys can tell I'm a dyke, so they keep a respectful distance, God bless them. However, I throw some love at both the girls and the boys, because I can tell they see me for who I really am. I'm an andro freak, and that's freak in a good way. And they obviously love it. I remember Jade saying my androgyny is the very thing that makes me attractive. As usual, I think she was right. Well, that's it.
A few more questions, just kind of big picture, looking forward. Can you talk about some of the main issues facing the intersex community now?
Thanks. Yeah, so I feel really blessed that this book is out, and it might give the impression that, you know, things are really great for intersex people and, you know, we're getting this positive attention. And I mean, in a certain way, yes, right, because of the reception for this. However, I have to stress that right here, just 5 minutes away at UCSF, these, quote, corrective, end quote, surgeries are still happening, right? Intersex genital mutilation, as many activists like to call it, because some of the surgeries, like clitoral reduction surgeries, are exactly the same as the surgeries called female genital mutilation, has not decreased. And part of that is the strength of the medical establishment in the U.S., right? And, you know, we're not the only community that's been impacted by this. and I like to remind myself of this when it seems really depressing, is that, you know, care and treatments and unnecessary medical treatments are really on the rise in a lot of ways. And so that is one of our biggest challenges, is that unlike the LGB community, who doesn't have, you know, this kind of medical institutionalized discrimination to deal with, we have this going on, you know, still. To be positive, though, I will say that I'm getting an increasing amount of emails from parents who have decided not to operate on their children. Yeah.
This is Bina, KALW's series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's program features writer and intersex activist Hida Valoria, whose new book is Born Both, An Intersex Life. Hida is joined in conversation by Sam McConnell, producer of the documentary The Trans List. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
And Hida, what do you want parents to know from your experience? What do you really want them to know if you know, parents who've never heard about intersex before, but suddenly they have an intersex infant?
Yeah, great question. You know, I want them to know that it's really so minor of an issue in my life that many friends who, like, knew me before I came out as intersex, right, and was just living as a presumably regular woman, were almost surprised by the level of activism, you know, that I became involved with. Because to them, it appeared like, well, you're just this normal person. I don't get it. What's this movement? Or what do you... Like, they literally didn't get, you know, the difference, which doctors predict is so horrific that we have to carve up a baby's genitals, you know, against their will. And I just want parents to know that it doesn't have to be a big deal at all, you know? And for me, actually, it wasn't a big deal until I met these other adults. I was thinking I would meet other adults who were like me and share the stories of growing up in this different body and actually share wonderful stories of my unique sexual experiences, you know, that were incredible, you know, based on how I was born. And instead, I met the most traumatized group of people that I have ever encountered. And I was honestly, I barely spoke the entire weekend. And there's a really powerful chapter about that in here called Gendercide, because I discovered that there was a movement to eliminate people like me from the planet. And I just could not believe the stories that I was hearing and the experiences, because here's another thing that parents really should know is it's typically not just one surgery, because babies obviously are growing, right? So body parts stretch and things come apart, and it's, you're basically, you know, people who, you know, agree to these procedures are signing their children up for a lifetime of being medicalized and having all these doctor's visits that they don't understand because they're babies and then infants and then young children. And it gives them an incredible sense of shame about who they are because their siblings aren't going through it. You know, their classmates aren't going through it. I know one person who had to lie every summer of his childhood, you know, and make up things like, well, I broke my arm, and, you know, just so now, all of this terrible psychological impact, which I do not have an ounce of, right? And so the hardest part for me, which does not exist for children today, for anyone being born today, was that the internet didn't exist, and the information that's out there now about intersex didn't exist. So the only difficulty that I had was, like, sensing, you know, that I was different and just not having a language for it or a way to, you know, conceptualize myself. That was challenging. And yet still, I managed, like the other people I know who are blessed to be left intact, I managed to develop a healthy identity despite all the ignorance. and, you know, and being different. And then the people I know who, and which is sadly the vast majority, who are subjected have such a completely opposite experience. And they constantly use the word shame to refer to intersex. It's almost become synonymous with most intersex people, this word shame. And you still see it in a lot of articles because that is what being medicalized imposed upon them. You know, and I would say, you know, love your child and spare them from this horrific experience of feeling inferior and feeling shame about that very special part of their, you know, adult life. You know, give them the option to really experience the joy of being who they are, and, you know, and the option to change that if they want later. You know, some people, as we know, with the trans community may want to change the sex characteristics they were born with, but that should be your choice, right? So give your child the choice to be who they are.
Finally, just real quick, maybe talk about just some other issues that are important for intersex adults and here and now. What about workplace discrimination or issues with identification, documentation, stuff like that?
Yeah, thank you, Sam. So I'll quickly say that all of the challenges that we face can really be decreased by people beginning to incorporate us into your conversations. And by that I mean saying things like men, women, and intersex people, and not just limiting it to men and women, because in fact there is a whole group of the human population which is as common as redheads. We are statistically, that statistic I read of 1 in 2,000 only refers to people with ambiguous genitalia, but there are the chromosomal variations I mentioned, and many different types, and there's a huge range. There's about 30 known variations, and everywhere from people who look very female to very male or in between. And when you take all of us together, we are as common as having red hair. We're 1.7%. So, you know, you all know intersex people, even within your personal lives, I'm sure. And yet, the thing that I know firsthand that's so difficult about coming out as intersex, that is so much harder than it was. I mean, I didn't have a hard time at all coming out as a lesbian, even though it was still not, you know, positive in 1986 when I came out. I mean, it was far from positive. But I was rebellious, and I just believed in the golden rule and that everyone is equal. And I was like, yeah, sure, this is how I am. And I know God loves me anyway. And I was kind of religious, and I had my concept of God, which I call the universe. And so I really believed that I was equal, and it didn't matter at all. But what was easy about that in comparison was that everyone knew what a gay person or a lesbian was. So I could come out, and I didn't have to give a biology lesson, you know, and like suddenly, you know, watch people's look of surprise and deal with all these questions, like just to share who I am. Right? So like, imagine that. Imagine if every time you shared a very, very basic fact about yourself, people were like, oh my God, what is that? I didn't know that existed. And, blah, blah, blah. And now you're, you know, you literally like, and I'm extremely out, and I like to come out whenever I can, but sometimes I don't have the time because I know, because I know that it'll entail this conversation with most people, you know?
Well, and now so, we have a book.
I know, yay!
You can just hand these out at parties.
I know. And so I went, yeah, right? You know, read this and you'll know. No, but like, so I'm sharing all that just to say that if you all just began to say male, female, intersex, men, women, intersex people, and then are like, yeah, you know, guess what? Not everyone's born male, female. That would assist the intersex community so much, because the challenges that we face, which Sam asked about, are things like the TSA. I have a hassle every time I go through the security scanners because they were designed with only males or females in mind. And I wrote a piece about it recently for the Daily Beast, which is like, when anyone goes through, and many people don't know this happens, it's literally on the TSA website, the agents press a pink or blue button. Yeah, when you go through that scanner. based on which gender they think you are, or which biological sex, however way you want to call it. And then the scanners are programmed to detect only male or female genitalia and sex characteristics, right? So I used to think at first when I started realizing something was happening, this began in about 2010, the scanners, and I thought, oh, I wonder which button they pressed for me, you know? But then I realized that no matter which button they pressed, you know, like literally no matter which button they press, my body sounds an alarm, literally an alarm. And the alarm tells them they need to check this area. There's a screen. And if you go through and you look back, you'll see the screen. And on the screen, whenever I go through, there's a red box right over my genitals. And it's so funny. Some of them are used to it, but like even flying over here now, I saw the agent. And they're looking at the box and they're like, oh, no, what does this mean? And I'm like, I'm laughing because I'm like, oh, I know what it means. Yeah, you're not, you know, but they're like, so, you know, but... You know, I have a good sense of humor, but there was one time recently which motivated me to write the piece where the agent was really cruel, like actually cruel, and got crueler when I said, you know, very politely and friendly, so, since I'm so used to it, like, you know, oh, yes, do whatever you have to do. I have a flight I'm trying to catch. She slowed down and, you know, to just deliberately try to make me miss my flight. Call the supervisor, and then while going over the whole spiel about all the many different clothing parts and body parts I'll have to touch, just had this really cruel look on her face. And, you know, it felt, honestly, and as a survivor of sexual abuse and, you know, many different forms, I can say it felt abusive, and it was really a difficult emotional experience. And so, you know, none of this would exist if the people who created these scanners had been educated enough to know that intersex people existed, right? And they could have just like mapped that into their criteria. So essentially, you know, and workplace discrimination, we're not covered. Right now we are on the brink of being legally recognized. Like it is beginning and it's wonderful. My colleague at my organization, OII USA, we discovered they had a very good legal case for being issued a non-binary passport because their birth certificate said sex unknown, which is very rare, but occasionally that was written before they decided which one to, you know, correct it to. And then they have all these papers from the VA saying they're intersex, that they're a Navy veteran. And so these are two government documents, right, which most of us do not have because they're trying to put us into each box and not acknowledging that we're intersex. And so long story short, they sued, they won, and the federal government had to acknowledge that intersex people exist. And it's also based, by the way, in a very coalition. The lawsuit was done in coalition with the LGBTQ community, where it was very clear that this is not simply because Dana is intersex. This is because Dana is intersex physically and also identifies as neither male or female, right? Because we don't want people to have to be, you know, again, another gender policing, like, well, only people who have intersex genitals or body parts can be non-binary. You know, I believe that gender is whatever you feel. You know, it's not related to your body parts. So the law is consistent with that as well. However, and the beauty of the coalition is that the judge was able to understand this in a way they never would have, really, just with a typically male or female person. You know, there's a lot of resistance to non-binary identity, right? People are like, oh, whatever, you're making this up, you're really a man or a woman. The fact that Dana was physically neither male or female is what really made this a strong case. So then shortly after, a colleague of ours got petitioned California and was the first non-binary Californian. I know this person. And they happened to also be born in New York City, where I was born. And so they received the first intersex birth certificate, was issued last December. And I have applied for mine and have been, you know, getting the emails that it should come shortly. So I think I'll soon have the second. Yeah, they kind of... So this is a really positive thing. However, you know, the government, even though the lawsuit was successful and said that the State Department has to issue the passport, then our administration changed. and so who knows, you know? And we actually, there was a conference abroad that I wanted Dana to go to for my org because I have a book event that I've committed to and I can't go, an important intersex conference, and they did not issue the passport. And they're stalling. And of course they are. And so really what we need is society to acknowledge intersex people, right? Because as we know, you know, laws mimic the social framework, the social awareness, social consciousness of the moment. And so we need people to really be talking about intersex people and welcoming us into conversations and acknowledging our existence for all these laws to change. Otherwise, it's very easy to keep things where they are because, you know, when adults complain and say this was done to me or, you know, or even try to say that there's a human rights abuse going on against intersex people, the typical medical response is like, oh, no, they're not. Those people are just males or females with this certain disorder that we had to help fix. Right? So there's like all of these attempts to just eliminate us, you know, by maintaining this binary and just saying like, well, there's this rare exception, but they can be fixed.
Well, I think your book is a big, big step forward.
So. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you both so much.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guest was writer and intersex activist Hida Valoria, whose new book is Born Both, An Intersex Life. Hida was joined in conversation by Sam McConnell, producer of the documentary The Trans List. The recording engineers at the JCCSF are Ben Bernardi, Brandon Battaglia, Dan Folds, Alex Espalet, Maya Finley, and Jake Gukowski. David Kwan edits and produces the program, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rashanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. I'm Jordan Abel. Thanks for listening.